Welcome to the Gay Buddhist Forum, where teachers from all schools of Buddhism offer their perspectives on the Dharma and its application in modern times, especially for LGBTQI audiences. These talks are offered freely to the world and made possible by appreciative listeners. If you would like to support our efforts to share the Dharma with underserved audiences, please visit gaybuddhist.org. There you can donate, find a list of upcoming speakers, or enjoy many hundreds of these recorded talks dating back to 1996.
I'm Jim.
Jeremy.
Tony.
My name is Tage.
Jeff.
I'm Richard.
Jeff.
I'm Brad.
And I'll read through the names online. We have Ruben, Bob, Tom, Marvin, another Tom, Richard, Christian, Daniel, Henry, Joe, Don, John, Jim, Andreas, and Frisco. Welcome, everyone. And my pleasure to introduce Dorothy Hunt. Dorothy serves as the spiritual director of Moon Mountain Sangha and was the founder of the San Francisco Center for Meditation and Psychotherapy. She's the author of Only This, Leaves from Moon Mountain, and Ending the Search, From Spiritual Ambition to the Heart of Awareness, as well as articles published on non-dual wisdom and psychotherapy. She teaches at the request and in the spiritual lineage of Adishanti, who invited her to share the Dharma in 2004. Dorothy has a long and deep connection to the teachings of Ramana Maharshi and the non-dual teachings of Zen Advaita and the Christian mystics. She invites a deep welcoming of the human expressions of the mystery. A licensed psychotherapist since 1967, Dorothy has now retired from her private practice. She's a mother and a grandmother. For more information, you can visit dorothyhunt.org or Dorothy Hunt Moon Mountain Sangha on YouTube.
Thank you for the introduction. And it's really a pleasure to be back with you. It's been a long time since I've been in person here, but I've always really, really enjoyed my time here. I think I did an online event with you 2021, but it's been a lot of years since person to person. Feels good. I can feel the energies of the heart really just while you're sitting. One question I have before I get into anything. Did any of you happen to hear or were you present for Norman Fisher's Dharma talk on the Israel-Palestine situation at Green Gulch the end of last month? No. I would highly recommend that talk for anybody who's interested in a perspective on Israel-Palestine situation. As you may know, Norman Fisher is Jewish. He's also a Zen Roshi. So it was a beautiful talk, and he ended it with one of my favorite poems by Thich Nhat Hanh. And that poem, which I'm sure some of you are familiar with, is the way I'd like to begin our time together here today. I'm not going to talk to you about Israel and Palestine. So. Enough of that on the news, right? But this poem was so fitting to talk really about any kind of conflict that we have within ourselves or in this world. So I want to read it to you. It's called Please Call Me by My True Names. And I'm sure some of you are familiar with it. Don't say that I will depart tomorrow. Even today, I am still arriving. Look deeply. Every second I am arriving to be a bud on a spring branch, to be a tiny bird with still fragile wings, learning to sing in my new nest, to be a caterpillar in the heart of a flower, to be a jewel hiding itself in a stone. I still arrive in order to laugh and to cry, to fear and to hope. The rhythm of my heart is the birth and death of all that is alive. I'm a mayfly, metamorphosing on the surface of the river, and I am the bird that swoops down to swallow that mayfly. I'm a frog swimming happily in the clear water of a pond. And I am the grass snake that silently feeds itself on the frog. I am the child in Uganda, all skin and bones, my legs as thin as bamboo sticks. And I am the arm merchant selling deadly weapons to Uganda. I am the 12-year-old girl, refugee on a small boat, who throws herself into the ocean after being raped by a sea pirate. And I am the pirate. My heart not yet capable of seeing and loving. I am a member of the Politburo with plenty of power in my hands. And I am the man who has to pay his debt of blood to my people, dying slowly in a forced labor camp. My joy is like spring, so warm it makes flowers bloom all over the earth. My pain is like a river of tears, so vast it fills the four oceans. Please call me by my true names, so I can hear all my cries and laughter at once, so I can see that my joy and pain are one. Please call me by my true names, so I can wake up and the door of my heart could be left open, the door of compassion. So what I want to draw our attention to in this poem and in your own experience is the I am. I am still arriving. I am a mayfly. I am the bird that kills the mayfly. I am a frog. I am the child in Uganda. I am the 12-year-old girl, and I am the sea pirate. I am a member of the Politburo. I am the man who has to pay his debt of blood. Please call me by my true name so I can hear all my cries and laughter at once, so I can see that my joy and pain are one. So I want to invite us to explore a bit this morning your own I am. Who or what does that really refer to? This that we all use, regardless of the language that we speak, I am. And then it's this and that and the other thing. I am a man, I am a woman, I have a name, I am, you know, gay, I am straight, I am tall, I am short, I am smart, I am dumb, I am, I am, I am. And then we have all these descriptors, right? That come after I am. But just for a moment or two, I know we had a lovely sitting in silence, but I just invite yourself, invite all of us to maybe close your eyes if you feel moved to, and just come into that sense of I am in yourself. Just looking, feeling, sensing deeply into I am before you add anything. Who or what is that that begins so many of our sentences, so many of our thoughts? I am. There's a sense of just being, right? Just existing. The I am. I am is life. And this beingness of yourself is awake, is it not? Before you try to awaken or try to put effort into something called enlightenment or whatever, before all of that, there's just this awake beingness. Can you begin to just feel into it? Not think into it, just sense into it. What is it to be? Just to be. Just to be. And this being lets everything else be as it is, the moment. Thought, the feeling, the sensation. Just being. manifestations of being itself. And maybe you can feel into what you might call or sense is your home ground. I can't tell you where that is or how to touch into it, but you know. You know. And to the extent you may have a sense of that home ground, I want to ask a few questions about that. Is there any judgment there? The mind has many judgments, but this that's simply here now, awake here now. Does it carry any blame or shame? This home ground of yours. Is there any fear here? The mind might have fear. But this that's quiet and silent and simply is. It's our birthright. We all are born with this. I can't even make a definition of this, and yet here it is. So then I just invite you to discover or to find or to look into where is the home ground of the me that we all imagine until we don't, is separate from everything else in the world, separate from the moment, even separate from ourselves, because we make judgments about a self. I love myself, I hate myself, I'm disappointed in myself, I'm proud of myself. Where's the home ground of this me? Where do you find it when you look? Where is it? The home ground of the me, isn't it found in your thought? Not to make it wrong, but just, isn't that where the me can be discovered, in this I thought? I am this, I am that, I am not that, I am not this. And so just for a moment or two, see if you can experience or sense into letting that home ground of the me, so to speak, fall into the deeper home ground of being itself, of just the I am without anything else added. See if you can just let it sink into this space of awake, aware, vast, open, empty. Mystery, really. We can call it Buddha nature. Awake nature. Awake beingness. Right here. That's right here. It's not someplace far away. And then I just invite you to just slowly open your eyes and look at anything, really, in this room. Anything from this sense of being. Sure, you'll come up with a name, but look without that being the foremost thought. Just look at anything from being, from this deeper space in yourself. Because when we're seeing from being, there's something that's fresh. There's something that's spontaneous. There's something that's intimate. Intimate. Looking here, you know, intimate. That's it. That's the way to see from being. Rather than always going through our narrative about something. That's going to happen. We're not judging it shouldn't be here, but there's something that's so profound about just being in the moment, allowing the moment to be exactly as it is. This that we are, whatever name we give it, apparently just loves to be, because it's being everything. It's being. It's being thought. It's being feeling. It's being nature. It's being the flower. It's being the sky. It's being the clouds. So, as we all know, being is also always becoming, isn't it? It becomes the doing. It becomes the way that we often grab hold of a separate self-identity by what we do. But when we're coming from that as our self-identity, the doing, there's often just a slipping into, quite naturally actually, slipping into this idea of more. Now I need to do more. I need to be a perfected self. I need to work on myself. I need to da-da-da-da-da-da in order to be worthwhile to myself. But this being, the beingness, you know, worth is not even on, it's not even part of the equation here. It's just being, being. This moment, this expression, this feeling, this thought, this flower, these trees that you might see outside, the moment as it is. And the more that we receive that from this sense of being, the freer we are, because this that we are, it's free to be. It has the freedom to be whatever. Being birth, being death, being the arms merchant, being the stick child in Uganda, so forth. I mean, Thich Nhat Hanh can write from that space because he has discovered, remembered. We don't discover something that's not here. We just remember it. We realize what's already here. And then we think, why was I going off trying to find something? Because all of you probably, I mean, if you've been meditating for a while, and I know some of you have for many years, we have these glimpses, don't we, of what we think, this is it. This is an awakened moment. This is, you know, and then we think, oh, it all looks like this. Yeah? We think it only looks like joy and bliss and happiness and pleasure, and it feels good, of course. Lovely to have those moments and those remembered moments of something that's not just stuck in the muck of, you know, your daily life, but your daily life is actually an expression of this that's so deep. And Thich Nhat Hanh, I had the pleasure of being on retreat with him a couple of times many years ago, and he spoke about his anger, you know, anger, yeah, Buddhist, no anger, good, you know. But he spoke about, you know, he was a young monk during the war in Vietnam, and he had a group of other aspirants who were like doing social work sort of things in a particular village, and that village was bombed 4 times, twice by the Viet Cong and twice by the United States in South Vietnam. Destroyed, people killed, both. The bombs from both sides, so to speak. And I don't know that this poem was written exactly about that village, but it was written for another village, or maybe the same. And it's called For Warmth. I hold my face in my two hands. No, I am not crying. I hold my face in my two hands to keep the loneliness warm. Two hands protecting, two hands nourishing, two hands preventing my soul from leaving me in anger. This was not a denial of anger. It wasn't a thought, oh, it shouldn't be here. It was a caring for it. I think, I don't know if this is so, who knows, but, you know, one thing I read about the Buddha at one point said, hold your anger as if it's your only child. There's a deep compassion. There's a deep, deep compassion there. So it's easy to see how being is always becoming in nature, right? I mean, we have the changing of the seasons, we have day and night, we have all of the ways that life manifests itself, that being manifests itself. One of the profound moments of nature that I recall, I was hiking in the mountains many, many years ago with a group of women. We went on what we called the Women's Wild Weekend every August. Now, we weren't really very wild, but we were in the wilderness, right? And about the most wild thing we ever did was we had a cabin, we rented a cabin, and we took the beds from the cabin out on the deck and slept in the bed under the stars. You know, that's about as wild as we got. But there was, you know, we were hiking every day in the mountains, and all these other people, well, they weren't that many. I think there were usually four of us. They were all more sturdy and fit than I was. And so they would always be in front of me. Have you ever been in a hike with people and there are always people in front of you and you're building, you know, bringing up the rear? Well, that was my role, always bringing up the rear. At any rate, and then probably you remember if you've had that experience, you know, your friends at some point decide to stop and wait for you, right? And then that's fine. We appreciate that. But then when you get up to them, they've all been resting, right? And then they're ready to go. And you're just still panting. But so anyway, it was one of those moments. And I said to them, I said, go ahead. I haven't had my rest. I'm just going to sit here on this rock. And it was one of those just clear, crystal clear mountain days. The blue sky, not a cloud in the sky. You know, the air in the mountain. It was just glorious. But I sat on the rock. I'm looking at the sky. Nothing in the sky. And then, out of no thing that I could possibly see, there's just this little wisp, this little tiny wisp of white. Really faint at first. And then it becomes a little bit clearer. And then it forms a cloud. And then the cloud grows. And then, as you know, I mean, the cloud will eventually rain, and there will be mountain streams that flow into lakes, that flow into rivers, that flow to the ocean. And this is our beingness, how it comes out of almost nothing we could possibly think about. You know, in this case, we're calling it the sky, but it's the ocean of awareness. It's the sky of our own awareness that things come out of, you know, and give form and shape to because of how our mind has learned what things are, and we give it names and so forth and so on. We can communicate with words, which is a lovely thing. But the words are never the deepest, are they? They can't really capture what you and I might call Buddha nature. They can't capture what's awake. But you are that. We all are that. And it's a matter of investigating, not because you should, you don't have to, but investigating what's the truth of who you are. What is the truth of the I am? If you take away those words, the I am, and here you are, what is here? What is actually here now? And you can imagine that you're your memory or your projections and so forth, but what's actually here right now? You see, because this is the only time we can be awake, is now. And this now is not a tiny little increment of time, as you know. It's where the timeless dimension and time meet right here, now, whatever this moment is. Whatever this is that's arising out of the no-thingness, the everythingness. You know, I think it was Nisargadatta who said, wisdom says I am nothing, love says I am everything. Between the two, my life moves, my life runs. And so we don't have to come down on one side or another, but to know that what's not two is not in opposition with duality. Our mind operates in duality, doesn't it? It operates in opposites. You wouldn't know hot if you didn't know cold or health and illness and day and night and all the things that define each other. Completely define each other. But I want to go back to this idea of the becoming, the doing that is becoming, because there's a way that we can get hooked on becoming something or someone that totally reifies the sense of a separate somebody, a separate self. You know, I am what I do. Now I have to do it better. Now I have to have. I mean, it all comes out of being. There's being and doing, and then there's having, right? I have a relationship. Is relationship actually a thing? You know? Or are you relating? You know? I have an experience. But in that moment, aren't you fully, if you're present, fully that experience? I am the experience. I mean, we've all had spiritual moments where we've been taught it's the sky and now there are clouds and, you know, just be the sky. But the sky and the clouds are made of the same thing. Do you know? You wouldn't know a single experience that you ever had, a single thought that you ever had, without being aware of it. And so when you really begin to grok more and more that this that's awake, you know, it's just open, right? Like right now, there's this space and an awake space that's coming right out of your own eyes to see this whole, the wholeness of this moment, you know? Whether we were indoors or outdoors, it would be the same. The wholeness is here. And it also can focus attention like an automatic camera lens, you know? It can be really wide and we can feel ourselves as this vast open space of awareness, or we can really focus on one particular thing. And the more attention you pay to this, the more it becomes habitual. Do you know what? It isn't about, I have to do it. It's just that if you're interested in living and doing and experiencing more and more from the truth of our being, the thing that we share, this family of being, we could say, you know, the more you pay attention to it, the more a reality you give it. Because anything we put our attention to, we give reality to, right? I mean, right now, billions of things are happening in this world. But what's happening right here and now is hopefully where you're putting your attention. Of course, I don't know what's happening in your minds. You could be very far away from whatever I'm pointing to, which is fine. You know, we're humans, and this is how this mind of ours operates. It just doesn't happen to be who we are. The I thought is not who we are. You know, Ramana Maharshi was a great sage of the last century. And his main practice was in self-inquiry. You know, really, who or what am I? Who or what am I? And he said an interesting thing. He said there were two Bible verses that were, from his perspective, encompassing the whole of the teaching. And those two Bible verses were, I am that I am. That was supposedly the divinity defining itself. I am that I am. And the other was from the psalm, be still and know that I am God. And what I would love to tweak that verse just a bit. Be still and know that the I am is God, is the divine, is Buddha nature. The I am, the beingness that you are right now. That these marigolds are right now, without the name marigold, or even without the color. Do you know, still, an expression coming right up out of the ground of being. And that ground of being, when it reveals itself, there's no thought there. In that moment, thought is absent. And that's why we can't really say anything about what it is in terms of some definition. I mean, we point to it using different words, of course, you know. You've heard the expression finger pointing to the moon. We could just say finger pointing to emptiness. But what is emptiness? You see, it's not what the mind thinks. My definition is it's that which is empty of definition and empty of self. Empty of definition and empty of self. And yet, as the Heart Sutra tells us, form is emptiness. Emptiness is form. Form is exactly emptiness. Emptiness exactly form. And this is where we come into a non-dual understanding. This is where someone like Thich Nhat Hanh can say, I am the mayfly. I am the bird that's eating the mayfly. I am all of it. So let me stop here and just see what you guys want to talk about, questions you might want to ask about being or doing or having, or something completely different. I'm here for whatever. Anyway. Yes?
What was your definition of emptiness? I know you said it about 30 seconds ago and it went right through me, but I liked it. Okay.
That which is empty of definition. And empty of self. Empty of separate self. Ramana called it the self, Buddha called it no self. But we're talking about pointing to the same mystery. I did a day-long, a few weeks ago, in honor of my 80th birthday, I'm happy to be born. I made it. Anyway, I did this day-long called The Wonder of Being, and I shared, you know, some of the wonders of being from experience here, and one of the things I said, well, one of the wonders is that at this stage, I can comfortably and profoundly say, I don't know who I am, and I'm... In myself, I'm pointing to what I'm trying to point to today. This place, this where thought is not there when we come into that unknown. You know, thought goes into the background. It may come forth very quickly. But in that moment where this reveals itself, there's nobody there to have it revealed to. Awakeness awakens to itself. It doesn't awaken to a separate somebody. So at any rate, I said this, I'm profoundly and comfortably, and then it came back to me later in a group. I was so surprised when you said that because, you know, there are those of us who wonder, if you don't know who you are, well, how come you're teaching? Anyway, there's an I don't know, and there's a knowing that I don't know, okay? And that those are not exactly the same thing. It depends on where we're coming from, how we're, you know, how we're interpreting anything, basically. Okay, what else is here today?
Bob online has a question. Bob, you want to
hear? Okay. Hi. Recently, during the past week or so, I saw a cartoon that I thought was full of wisdom, and it said, don't be a noun, be a verb.
Yes.
But I thank you for your talk because you've taught me I can be both, should be both, and can get good experience and good feeling and thought from being both the noun and the verb. So I thank you very much for your talk.
Well, you're quite welcome. And even if we think of being as a noun, it's actually always in motion, isn't it? It's still and it's silent and it's at peace. It's changeless, you know. Whatever is changeless is actually what's also changing. So I'm glad that those things came to you in a way that one made sense and also opened the door for us to expand who we think we are, what we think we are. And the more we do that, the less judgment we have. Actually, and the more compassion can flow from the heart. because whatever this is, Buddha nature, we'll use that word for now, you know, it can be, we can awaken up and out of identification with a separate somebody, but just hanging out in emptiness is only halfway around the circle, as my teacher Adyashanti would say. Coming into the absolute is only halfway around the circle. And so how does it want to be embodied? You know, so then this comes in. It comes in. And then the heart may awaken. And then we have more the experience of love and intimacy, gratitude, you know, oneness, actually. And then there's the, you know, awakening in the deep underground, so to speak, the hara, where energetically we hold on to the sense of being separate. Separate doesn't mean we're not different. We're different. We're unique expressions, but not separate. And there's a difference. What other comments or questions?
I'm online too.
Okay.
Dorothy, thank you so much. You know, I'm really glad you used a couple of princes to clouds because, as you were mentioning that, it occurred to me, I'm here in Arizona right now. We get these huge thunderhead clouds off in the distance, like 50 miles away, and yet they look enormous. And I think to myself, wow, that cloud must be 3-4 miles tall, you know, high. But then it occurred to me, no, a cloud is not one thing. It's just a set of conditions that make water vapor visible. So the conditions that allow it to appear is 5 miles high, you know. And in some ways, we're like that too. We're a set of conditions that are just right for us to experience things.
Yeah.
You know, when you said we did that meditation, like, who are you? It occurs to me that I'm just this entity inside this body that looks out through these eyes and experiences the world through these senses. And sometimes I get lost in those sensory perceptions, and other times I come back. And so it's this, you know, constant changing of what we really are. It's, like you said, it's very hard to put our fingers on it.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
So thank you.
Yeah, well, thank you. And, you know, the clouds are beautiful analogy to use in terms of what's always being and also becoming, you know? Just like us, you know, being and also becoming, you know, moment to moment to moment to moment to moment, for sure. Yeah.
Thank you for this talk. I so often when I have practiced, say, mindfulness meditation, and I've been. At one point, I started to wonder. I see objects of meditation, and I ask myself, "Who sees this term?" And it's so refreshing to hear a discussion about it. And it doesn't diminish the method at all. Mindfulness, just that it seems much more pertinent in a way, like that. And I think, as you're saying, by definition, if there's any attitude to who am I, I mean, I know where it lands in me, in my body, but other than, you know, some connection to awareness, do you call it a thing, is that's not it. So it has to be unknown, not knowing.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean,
absolutely. And so often, even though mindfulness can lead us beyond, mm-hmm. we might say.
Yeah.
So often there's this assumption that there's a separate somebody who's being mindful,
mm-hmm.
and then that separate somebody has to be mindful, mm-hmm. and that's
yeah.
considered an activity of the mind.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so often the mind is full of everything but
yeah.
you know, the truth of what we are. Not essentially. I mean, there's big mind. That's
mm-hmm.
is another way we can speak about what I'm trying to talk about. With greater or lesser degrees of success. You know, my teacher Adyajanti said, you know, trying to use words, you know, we will always fail. We just try to fail as well as we can. So that's the hope, you know, to fail as well as we can. But yeah, Ramana Maharshi spoke about the self-inquiry as being one of the only methods that doesn't begin with the sense of a separate me who's doing it. Mm-hmm. You know, all the other methods, while they're beautiful and there's a time and place for them, and we all have our own unique way of expanding the idea of who we are, the experience of who we are. But this question is not an intellectual question. This question, who or what am I, will eventually stop thought, because you'll come to a place that you don't know. You know, when you exhaust all the descriptions of a self, you know, okay, we come back. To me, it's like, you know, let's say this is the unknown, and here's the mind coming closer and closer. Who am I? And then it'll come to a place where it can't go any further as a mind, as thought, right? And this is where most minds just get the hell out of there. Woo, this is scary, I don't know, you know. Or they'll say, this doesn't work, because I don't know. I come to this place of I don't know.
Yeah.
And I would say, could you just hang out there for a little bit?
Yeah, try to get comfortable there.
Exactly, being comfortable in that unknown. Because eventually, when the mind stops, even for an instant, it just flips. You know, this subsumes it. Mm-hmm. Now this will come out again. Thought will come out again. I mean, spiritual seekers have this idea that, oh, once this happens, then it will all be, you know, fill in the blank. But no, it's the moment as it is, and it's an incredible grace that we all have to have a form to experience the moment as it is. You know, there are a lot of moments we would prefer to be different moments, certainly in the world and in our own experience. But somebody came to Ramana, who had been very upset with him during his lifetime, and I don't have to tell you the whole story, but he came kind of at the end of his life to Ramana and said, well, please forgive me, I said all these horrible things about you, you know, please, you know, I'm so sorry, don't forget me, you know. And he said back to him, he said, even if you forget me, I could never forget you. And the guy says, but I'm going to be in hell. And Ramana says, I am there too. Do you know? And that's what we're talking about. I'm not talking about a place called hell. I'm talking about these hellish moments that we all have. You know, or if you've been on retreats, you know, some of them are blissful and some of them are retreats from hell.
Yeah.
Where all the crap that you hoped would never come up again, you know, gets to surface because we're finally quiet enough and open enough for whatever is here that wants to be felt, that wants to be understood, that wants to be loved, can come up in the silence. And of course, meditation is a great form of psychotherapy if we really spend some time in that space that allows everything to be as it is. We can learn a great deal about not what we are so much as what we're not.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Richard online also has a question. Go ahead, Richard.
Hi, yes, thank you very much for your talk. I was given a visualization practice by my teacher to deal with ADHD, called a tree visualization, where if I'm outdoors, I stand visualizing my feet going as roots into the ground, into the water, finding jewels and gems in my hair and my fingers up, reaching up in the sky for the sun, and just standing like that, being. And it was a tremendous help. Helped me to focus and to just turn off all of the overactive mind. I wanted to share that with you. It was especially challenging to do it in the wind.
I love that. I love that because just in my own experience, just coming here today, I was just aware of all the trees in the same way that you're speaking about it. These trees aren't, you know, I mean, they're If they're flexible, they move with the wind, but the roots go to such a deep place, right? And many of the trees around here were here before we were born, and they're going to be here after the form goes. You know, so there's a steadiness and a strength in even appreciating, you know, what it is to be your own tree with your roots going way, 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 way down to the ground of being, really, and how it can feel very steady even when the waves of the mind are just going back and forth, the branches are just with whatever. And it's such a, and I'm sure some of you have had this experience, it's a very weird experience when you first begin to have it, where you can be so upset about something or so fearful or so angry or so, you know, in reactivity, and something isn't. Do you know? Something isn't. It's still at peace even when the mind is not peaceful. It's not threatened even when the mind is fearful. And that's that same felt sense that he was just talking about. You know, it's like, yeah, the roots go deep. And they also touch the sky. You had something.
Yeah, that was a wonderful talk. It's great to have you in the same room with us again. It's true.
Nice for me too.
This thing about being, I would describe it as a sensation of a presence. I mean, that is my experience.
That's another good word for it. Absolutely, presence.
But a sensation.
Yes, it's a physical sensation.
Yes. Okay.
And the more we're present with our whole body, you know, if you look at a flower, or a tree, or your hand, or whatever, with your whole body, you know, all the senses open. You're listening, you're seeing, you're touching, you're feeling, you know, there's a full presence in that. And it becomes an incredibly intimate experience. You know, that's why we think of ourselves, to my way of thinking, that's why we think of ourselves as separate, because it's so intimate. This that's awake in each of us, it's so intimate with the moment, because it can't separate. Form is exactly emptiness. It doesn't separate itself from the moment. And that's why, you know, one can say, as you know, sages have said, you know, nirvana is samsara. Samsara is nirvana. Do you know? It's seeing from that not to perspective. And yet you can also experience it when you're deeply present. If you're deeply present to anxiety, for instance, you're not trying to get away and you're not grabbing hold and you're maybe not doing an intellectual analysis of it, although all that might happen, it's not wrong. But you then begin to feel that what you're interpreting called anxiety is actually just energy, and it's an energetic in your body, isn't it? And then we put a name to it, and then we have a judgment about it, and then we try to get rid of it, and then. But the more we can just let ourselves experience what's here without so much of the mental activity, the quicker it just gets to be what it is, and then the next thing happens. You know, things just get to be. A woman came to my office many years ago, and she'd been crying for 3 weeks, and there was nothing in my assessment of her that made me think she was, you know, psychotically depressed and need to think about hospital or medication or anything. There was none of that. And I said to her, you know, maybe just something wants to cry. It was just that simple, you know. Maybe just something wants to cry. And she came back the next week. She said, guess what? You know, after you said that, I didn't cry the whole week. just giving ourselves permission to be where we are, how we are, and what we are. And I hope all of you will do that in your own experience to the degree that it's possible, to let yourself be how you are and where you are and that you are, because that piece is really a foundational piece. So I think our time is up. It's been great to be here.
Thanks so much.
Thank you for the invitation.
So it's just time here for our host.
Yes, I am your host today. Please stay and enjoy the company of the Sangha. There are refreshments and hot water for tea. There are some vegan blueberry muffins and some grapes. And if you use a cup, you can just leave the dish in the sink and I'll take care of that. I'll be going around with a dab bowl to accept contributions to cover our expenses. Your generosity is appreciated. Donations can range from $10 to $20 or more. And for people online or even here, if you don't have the money or can't do it, you can go to the gbf.org and go to the donate button. You can donate money that way. Pretty much everybody's here, but our donations, our money we do are for honorariums for the Dharma speakers, rent for this beautiful center, and our quarterly newsletter, which is mailed primarily to people in prison. There's a newcomer's sign-up sheet on the credenza. If you'd like, you can sign up. And at 12:30, some people meet at the door to go to lunch, and you're all are welcome.
Other announcements? I would like to recognize Tom Hart and thank him deeply for his service to our Sangha. Maybe none of you even knew that this was happening in the background, but we have a post office box, and people who receive our newsletter, incarcerated Buddhists, write to us and inquire about Buddhism with us. And Tom has been for years now. It's like time flies by, but has been going to the post office and fielding those letters. And so thank you, Tom, very much.
Thank you, Tom.
He is having to step away from that commitment, so that is an open position, a way that you could serve our Sangha if you're interested. It's a very meaningful volunteer thing to do. Yes?
Yeah, and the post office is right on Market Street in Cass Road.
Yeah.
And the door so it just seems to have to be open. And I think they do pick it up about once every week and a half or so
it's not to you. Yeah. All right. Any other announcements?
I might just say, if any of you are interested, Moon Mountain Sangha does a monthly satsang on the fourth Tuesday of every month from 7 to 9 on Zoom. So if any of you are interested, you'd be more than welcome to join us.
Thank you. Yes?
I just want to thank again to Richard for throwing such a wonderful retreat. And Joey.
We with Jared.
And Jeff. And Cass. It was a terrific retreat.
Oh, I'm so glad.
And we're going to have another one on December 5 days, April 17th through 21st, at Bob DuPont.
Beautiful. It's one of my favorite places.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Well, we close with, would you like to offer there, or we'll do ours?
Okay. Do you hold hands?
Right. By the power and truth of this practice, may all beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all be free from sorrow and the causes of sorrow. May all never be separated from the sacred happiness, which is without sorrow. And may all live in equanimity, without too much attachment or too much aversion, believing in the equality of all that lives.
Thank you so much.
Dorothy, you're cheating time. You're looking fantastic.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Gay Buddhist Forum. If you would like to hear several new talks per month and be notified of upcoming speakers so you can participate live, please subscribe to this podcast, like us on Facebook, and join our mailing list by visiting gaybuddhist.org.